By the way, this is somebody's favorite show! Hi, Dan Shakespeare here. You know, for most of the stuff that I play, you probably think that I'm much older, but you know what? Most of you are probably way off, because I'm only 23 years old. Tune in to the Shakespeare Show between noon and 1 p.m. on Wednesdays. It's songs from before the 1920s to alternative stuff today, plus jokes and riddles, all sorts of fun stuff. Just put any of it on your iTunes if you need to. Pretty soon it'll be coming out on albums.
Janice McKenzie, and I started doing a show in 1985 called Rude Awakening, and I want to wish CITR a very happy 75th birthday, FM 101.9.
We'll be right back. Juggernaut Cemetery. The Juggernaut at the cemetery. I know a name or two on these stones. Girl in the ground, I was gonna marry. Girl in the ground, I was gonna marry. Girl in the ground, I was gonna marry. But she divorced herself from flesh and bone. Dogs are the gates that I should be wearing. Dogs are the gates that I should be wearing. Dogs are the gates that I should be wearing. But they misunderstood my shouts and moans. Jerking off at the cemetery. Jerking off at the cemetery.
Rock, electro, weird stuff, dark stuff, and whatever's banging around in the mind of Macri this week. Wednesday nights, 1 to 4 a.m. here on CITR Radio, 101.9 FM in Vancouver, or listen live at CITR.ca.
Turn away and forget everything. Kiss the tiny chin chin boy. There's too many ways to see a sin. 50 angry mountains in a day. One by one they melt away. Licked up by my chin.
Sam from the Go Team, and you are listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Afternoon, we're bringing you out of the maelstrom into quiet. I don't know, we're just talking here. For some reason, each one of our shows starts this way with that loud kind of music. Then we go quiet. This is Woody and Haida. I have three Haida names. Kaunjanga Iskan Kitukun Iskan Kaudhangas Hinudikyaang. In Tlingit, I have a name It's Ani with an old raven, but that's a raven that flies until the last pole falls. So my grandfather was the fourth one, I think, to hold that name, and I'm the fifth one. So, but everybody knows me as Woody, so we'll just stick with that. Some of the things I've wanted to talk about for a long time, but I was so caught up in doing the other things. I work for VACFAST, the Vancouver Aboriginal Child and Family Services Society, supposed to be half-time, but it's not really possible to be half-time. I work as a client support elder, and so I'm going to be changing up the schedule on our program here from Thursdays to Monday. So starting on June 16th, we'll go from 11 till noon. And I hope to have some guests from people here at the university and some other people who are writers and a few like that. One person I'd really like to get a hold of is Robert Bringhurst. He's written a number of translations, Haida translations from the old anthropologist. And one that's quite fascinating to me is called Nine Visits to the Myth World. Handle of the Kwayatlanas, Haidas from southern part of Haida Gwaii. A village no longer exists. There's remains of it left. But this man was a storyteller, and he told all these stories in the Haida language, and Robert Bringhurst translated it to English, and it's all like poetry rather than prose. And I was curious as to why people would tell me sometimes that when I was telling stories, it was sort of like poetry. And I didn't realize that my teachers had been teaching me that way. So a lot of times I'll be telling a story about something, and it's like I'm sitting outside myself listening to the story because those aren't my words. So anyway, I'm hoping to get in touch with Robert so we can talk about he has two other books prior to this one. And also from a book by David Peet called Blackfoot Physics. David Peet is a physicist and writer. He took part in some discussions on indigenous science. He was trying to find out where they were going to go with their science. And I'd like to read just a little bit of what he wrote that came out of those discussions. He said, for example, trees process the manifestations of animating energies into a particular environment, move to a different part of the world, and the tree, in its deeper sense, is no longer the same. While the word dog changes in purely arbitrary fashion as we drive across the frontier between the United States and Mexico, the sound vibration of the word for tree and a material manifestation of the process are all tied to the changing context of an actual landscape. Another significant difference between indigenous and European languages lies in what they reveal to us about the nature of thought. Within our European languages, in thinking we have a tendency to group things together, languages and thinking, we have a tendency to group things together into categories. Thus, we have generic words like birds, fish, trees, rocks, mountains, particles, people, thoughts, feelings, and emotions. Yet this form of categorizing is not an inevitable feature of the human mind, for indigenous languages support totally different forms of logic and reasoning. A wide variety of creatures swim in water. Some come to the surface to take a fly. Others prefer to feed near the bottom. Yet despite the many differences, we classify them all within the category of fish. The concept of fish does not exist within the Algonquin languages. The Crees do not have a word in their own language that corresponds to our fish. Rather, they refer to the processes of animation that take place in the rivers and lakes. Likewise, they do not have a concept of bone. Instead, they use words that refer to particular animals or to parts of an animal's body or something that's in a medicine bag. It isn't that these languages have not properly developed or that the thought process of the Cree people are primitive because they do not categorize the world. They have chosen to work within the world in a different way from us. What's inside that drawer, we ask. Knives and forks, we are told. When we open the drawer, we are not surprised to see sets of fish and steak knives, a bread knife, a carving knife, a paring knife, a chopping knife, and a knife for cutting cheese. To us, knives are knives, things used for cutting. We may use adjectives to distinguish between fish and steak knives, but we would never go so far as to ask our language to differentiate between the individual steak knives in a particular set. So, in short, trying to understand, we'll say, the native mind, without any knowledge of the language or the particular culture that gave rise to that language, it's not that very easy to understand. For us, learning English, sometimes my father used to say things to me, and I'd have a big laugh about it and explain to him why it didn't work quite that way. Some of you have seen probably some of the advertisements from different Chinese businesses where they've translated Chinese to an English word to where they use something like beautiful when maybe they meant delicious. So trying to understand each other is really what I want to be able to do with this language to language. We can't make direct translations from one language to the other, so we can discuss the concepts of how do we see the world. And this is what took place during those 10 years that we were holding those discussions on indigenous science, our ways of knowing, our ways of, I guess you might say, finding truth. So anyway, that's what I'm really interested in, and I'll see if I can find some scholars here at the university. But I don't know how well that'll work out, because one of the things that disturbs me is I'm a mind reader, and when I come on a campus, I can't find anything to read. But anyway, seriously, I really want to find people who can discuss these issues or these concepts and try to make them in just plain ordinary language. I think sometimes we confuse things by trying to use big words. Here's a little short story I heard about a Tlingit man. This was around the early part of the 20th century, early 1900s, and apparently he really admired these. There were some white guys that used big words, and he really admired them for it. So he decided he wanted to learn a big word so he could do like them. So he cast about until finally one day he hit upon a word he thought, now this is the big word I can learn. I want to do this one. So he practiced some more and practiced. Finally, one day, he felt, I'm ready. So as he was walking down the street there in Juneau, Alaska, one of those men that's used big words came walking up to him, extended his hand. He says, how are you, Frank? Frank, with a big smile, answered, delicious. That was his big word, delicious. Sometimes words sound good, but they don't really mean what we think they do. The word for sweet in Haida, hulan, it's made way down deep in the throat, like a H sound, but it's represented by the International Phonetic Alphabet as an X. Hold on. That's okay when you're referring to food because it's something, it says that it, the sensation is sweet, I'll put it that way, that you get from that food. It tastes sweet. But when you use it with humans, it's different. Then it becomes a sensual experience. To make a long story short, I was at a senior center having supper with my father and this other friend of his. And when we walked in, he told me, he said, when they're nice to you, just if they're real sweet, say I'm sweet. So as we went in, my uncle's wife was facing the door. And when she saw me, how are you? Shinrang Heidang. He said, and I said, Di Aulan. And I thought those ladies was going to wet themselves. They were laughing so hard. And the short of it is, well, the next day I asked this Alec, I said, what'd you do to me? He said, what are you talking about? And I said, you told me to say I'm sweet. So I said, Di Aulan. And Dad said, I almost said something wrong. He and Dad just about killed themselves laughing, too. Apparently, what I said was, I'm good in bed. And for a long time, those old ladies, when they'd see me, they'd sort of smirk and say, hi, sweet. So you can have fun with mistakes. Well, anyway, I can't hang around here very long today. I've got to get back to work, back with VacFast. Tonight we have a program. Every Thursday evening we have a program called Strengthening Families. And right now I believe we have 12 families, and they make something like 212 or 215 families I've worked with in the past 6 years. And on Tuesday nights we have a program called Strengthening Fathers. And this is where we start from the proposition that a man isn't born, a man is developed. A male is born and learns to be a man. And the same with a father. Siring a child doesn't automatically make you a father. But first you can learn to be a man. You've got to face things. You've got to take responsibility for things. You got to be a protector. There's a whole bunch of other things. And then you learn to be a father. So that's on Tuesday nights, and that's from 5:30 to 8, and the one tonight with the families is from 5 to 8. The one on Tuesdays, 5:30 to 8, is primarily for First Nations or Native fathers, and I'd like to see some of the younger guys come in there too, say age 14 and on, so they can start learning about the things that we didn't learn when we were their age. But for the families, they have to be referred to us by social worker. So I'll leave it at that and head back over there to VacFast. And I hope to have some interesting material for you, and tell your friends about it. These things we'll be talking about. We'll also talk sometimes about current events, about some of the politics and some of the things that are going on. But essentially what we want to do is to get people to start understanding each other. We got to get rid of this whole concept of race. Race is a competition to the top. But unfortunately, it's really taken us to the bottom. So anyway, I'll talk to you next. So it's not next week we'll be here, but the week after that on June 16th from 11 till noon. And until then, enjoy the sunshine, don't get sunburned, and have a great weekend. Good afternoon. Tachkwi, come on in, sit down. Well, here it is, it's Language to Language at CITR. Gnarji's over there, running the show, pushing switches and buttons and everything.
Yeah, I'm going to turn you on as fast as I turn you off, Woody.
And then we have our friend here, Bruce Miller, professor here in the Department of Anthropology at UBC. And we'll talk about a number of things here. Some of it is currently one of the topics of discussion, has to do with the former Grand Chief of the Assembly of First Nations, Sean Atleo. And some of the responses people have expressed to that resignation, and maybe some thoughts about where the organization is going. And then, Gunarji, you said somebody was calling.
Yeah. Shannon Hecker will be calling in regards to some rallies that she has been coordinating, and she's going to give us the scoop on what's happening this week.
Okay, because I can't stay very long. I'm going to be about a half hour, and then I got to run and drive, not just run all the way. I have to drive.
Who's our special guest today?
Well, I introduced Bruce Miller here.
Bruce
he's
Miller.
Our special guest, yeah. And he's,
welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And we don't mean AA. It's language to language.
Yeah, well, see, well, Bruce is involved in a lot of things here in BC dealing with the Aboriginal peoples, one of which had to do with getting the courts to accept oral history as testimony in court cases, working with the Commission on Missing and Murdered Women. So there's quite a number of other things, too. He's always keeping current on things. And so maybe we can take a look at Sean's resignation. You want me to read it, or are you
sure.
going to read it?
Well, I can read it or you
okay.
can read it. All right, just wait. Okay, Assembly of First Nations National Chief Sean A. Inchit Atlio made the below statement in Ottawa. So I'm going to read that below statement for you. He says that I have stated clearly priority on the recognition of treaty of Indigenous rights and title on the safety and security of our most vulnerable, and I've also made my priority in education on education for our kids plainly clear. I have said it is our time as Indigenous peoples that we must smash the status quo, and that my job is as an advocate to open doors for First Nations to drive change. It is on this basis that we have worked very hard to achieve a new conversation between Canada and First Nations, a conversation grounded in recognition, respect, and ultimately reconciliation, and to reach a realization that stronger First Nations are vital for a stronger Canada. I have had the great honor to and privilege to visit over 100 First Nations schools in every region. It is the time spent with kids, their dedicated teachers, the parents, and the grandparents that has both inspired me and created a steely resolve and determination. I think of the late Shannon Kustashin, young boys and girls in remote northern communities like young Jaden. You've heard me reference so many times before. It is a spark in their eyes and the knowledge that as leaders, as the adults, we must get this right now. The work before us is absolutely challenging. If it were easy, it would have been accomplished by now. Today's conversation began over 40 years ago with the remarkable leadership of the late George Manuel and many other Indian control of Indian education and many others Indian control of Indian education in 1972. A policy statement crafted by our own educators, including Verna Kirkness, remains a powerful affirmation of our resilience and our determination to achieve change and justice for our children through education. Smashing the status quo means ending the glacial pace of change for our people and providing full support for growth and success. Smashing the status quo means new approaches grounded in recognition and in reconciliation. The current discussion and diverse views remind us within the Assembly of First Nations that we too have much work ahead. The inspiration behind the creation of the Assembly of First Nations was to serve as an advocacy body, bringing together the nations and supporting one another. I have encouraged reflection on our processes and approach within the Assembly to reflect a sense of a rebuilding of our nations. Smashing the status quo means that everyone has a role to play. The status quo should not be acceptable to any political party, the NDP, the Liberals, or the Conservatives. The status quo should also never be acceptable to our chiefs and leaders. This work is as a challenge for all parliamentaries, and it is as a challenge for our nations. Everyone knows the recent history here of an open letter and of a clear resolution and five conditions. Throughout and with the mandate of chiefs, I and many others with me have done everything possible to achieve this change. I am very proud of the work accomplished, he said, very proud of our collective efforts to overcome the status quo on the issue, on this issue and others. We've been through important and sincere efforts before in constitutional negotiation, a royal commission, and other more recent important efforts such as the Kelowna, taken forward by former Prime Minister Paul Martin. The current proposal on education is the latest attempt and a sincere constructive effort on the part of Prime Minister Stephen Harper to take a step forward. This work must be understood in that context as a challenge not for me or any one individual, but a challenge and a call to action for the entire country. I have fought for this work and to achieve this mandate. This work is too important, and I am not prepared to be an obstacle to it or a lightning rod distracting from the kids and their potential. I am therefore today resigning as national chief, and that was on May the 2nd. He also continues to say that I have carried out my actions based on principle and integrity. Personally, I believe this work must happen. It can and should happen in parallel to other efforts addressing fundamental questions of how we do this work. Now the work started so many years ago must continue. It must continue in every community, and it must continue within Parliament. I challenge every party and every First Nations to carry forward this work. Failure to simply not is not an option. Failure is simply not an option. Fighting for the status quo is simply not acceptable. So would you like to add any comments, either one of you?
Well, from what he's saying, it sounds like education at any cost, but we have to take a look at what direction is that education going to go, and also who's going to control it. Is it going to be band council politics? Or, you know, something that seemed to work quite well in other places where you had something like parent-teachers associations where they work together. So I don't know what that bill might look like, but apparently somebody's very dissatisfied with it. And so to join the fight on either side without knowing the facts is it's sort of... not relevant, I guess I might say. It's not a good thing to do. So I guess we just have to see what's happening. We don't know what's going on with the politics also. But the organization, it gets its funding from federal government, as do the band councils. So I would say as a matter of law that they're all nothing more than administrative arms of the Crown because they're created by the Indian Act. I don't know what created AFN. Is it created by the Indian Act, or Bruce, do you happen to know?
No, I don't know offhand, but the problem you're talking about is one that Paul Tennant, the UBC political scientist, pointed out several years ago in his book on that, in that freestanding leadership organizations are in a better position to push for things in their own way. But I want to point out that Sean Atleo is from a family, Chief Atleo is from a family, with a long history of interest in education, and his father and uncles were teachers and writers. And I believe he has a sincere dedication to that point. But I found it interesting that he said that Prime Minister Harper was making a sincere effort to push on the education front. And as you said, we don't know what's going on inside there. I find it kind of difficult to believe that Mr. Harper is doing that because all the other things he's doing regarding our environment and also regarding Aboriginal people are not progressive.
No, it seems to leave everybody out and he wants only his way. And that's what struck me too, is when he made the comment about the Prime Minister. Well, we've got somewhat the same thing happening here in British Columbia, with government saying, well, we're going to sort of take money away from liberal arts and put it into apprenticeship programs so that we can have everybody ready to go when the oil pipelines get put in place.
The Union of BC Indians Chiefs, I'm just going to pull from their statement on Shawnut Leo's resignation. They say that we are shocked and disappointed and deeply saddened to hear of our national chief's resignation. And without question, the Harper government's consistent unilateral paternalistic and take-it-or-leave-it approach to its First Nations legislative agenda has completely poisoned the well of Canada's relationship with First Nations across the country.
Yeah, they recognize it. And so that's why I say I was a little bit surprised, but I do know that Chief Atlio's family, I know his uncle, one of his uncles, and I know that this commitment to education has always been a major concern, and seems like maybe somebody got blinded by the light of government power. I don't know, you know, but maybe if we're just nice to our Prime Minister, that he'll just be nice back to us, but...
Well,
unfortunately, it doesn't work that way.
But Sean Atleo has been, like, a lot of people have been disappointed in that he's continues to build these relationships with the government, which isn't really what the people want.
So it's always a question when you've got such a bad administration in power, do you duck your head and hold your ground and wait for that to pass and to work with somebody maybe like Prime Minister Martin, or do you keep pushing forward in the agenda that he had in mind there? And he apparently went the latter route and didn't meet the criteria of some other folks.
Yeah, I guess he was under quite a bit of pressure, not only from government but from his own constituency. So sometimes that's the most difficult decision to make. Do I keep beating my head against the wall, or do I declare bankruptcy? Which way can I save the most?
Well, speaking of which, Sean Kirkham he's now under house arrest.
Who's that?
Sean Kirkham.
Wow.
He's under house arrest. He was the fellow that was helping to lay those plaques down for the missing and murdered women and everything now. So, yeah. Do you want to know more about that?
Yeah.
No?
Well, you no. brought it up. Let's go with it.
Yeah, if I can find it. Maybe I shouldn't have brought it up. That was wrong of me. Continue on.
Yeah. Well, when was it Paul Tennant?
Yes.
Yeah, that was something I wholeheartedly agree with, is that if you have a freestanding organization that sort of funds itself, then it's not subject to, you know, as laughingly referred to, the golden rule. He who has the gold rules. And that's really unfortunately the fact here, is that somebody holds the purse strings, and if you start wiggling too much, they tighten them up and you don't get anything. But if you have a freestanding organization, then you have a better chance of not only survival, but gaining allies. This way, you're isolated. Nobody beyond the Indian Act really wants to get involved. They don't want to be allies to these things. I don't think they do, except maybe the organizations that are more loosely structured, I guess you might say, sort of like environmental groups and this sort of thing. But to get political clout, you need numbers, you need people. And it's just sort of a feeling I have, is that not too many will really want to get involved with the Indian Act organizations. I don't know.
Well, that's a problem, because that's a structure that is in place.
Yeah.
And the other problem is finding alternative funding if you want to create a leadership organization.
the way the thing was been set up from the very beginning, it really guaranteed that nobody would have any money. The rules were such that you couldn't leave the reserve, you could not go get a professional license, you couldn't be a lawyer, a doctor, you couldn't get any of those things until just this last generation. And any of the resources in the area, they all belong to the Crown. In fact, the reserves, by definition, are simply lands reserved for a federal purpose. So the people who live on them don't own them. So they guarantee you're not going to have any money. No. See, I see lights flashing. I'm getting a detached retina again. Or is that the telephone?
That's the telephone.
Okay,
it's
I'm
our
okay.
caller. We'll take your call right after this.
Yeah. So all this.
You're listening to Clan Wee on Language to Language 101.9 FM. You have me, Gunnarji O'Sullivan, co-hosting with Woody Morrison and special guest Bruce Miller. We have a call-in from Shannon Hecker, who's going to tell us all about National Day of Resistance. Hello, Shannon.
I'm calling in because I wanted to announce there's an event happening on May 14th, that's next Wednesday, in Ottawa, which is the National Day of Resistance, and it's going to be a rally and march outside Parliament Hill in Ottawa to bring attention and also to request the repeal of Bill C-33, the First Nations Control of First Nations Education Act, as well as to demand a public inquiry into the murdered and missing Indigenous women of Canada, and also to repeal, in an effort to repeal Bill C-10, which is the Contraband Tobacco Act. So in solidarity with this event in Ottawa, I, together with a friend who lives here from there, have created an event on the same day, which will be taking place at the Sinclair Center, downtown Vancouver. That's 757 Hastings Street West. And it is a Canada Service Center. So right now I'm just working on our speakers list, people who are going to speak on the other topics. But, yeah, So I'm in the middle of getting it all together still, and I am looking for people to come and speak. And Bruce Miller was one of the people I emailed half an hour ago.
Well, do you have any comments, Bruce, on some of the issues that Shannon will be dealing with on the National Day of Resistance?
Hi, Shannon. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, Bruce. How are you?
All right. What time of day is your event going to take place?
It begins at 11 a.m. Probably go for a couple hours. Still working these things out. I only learned of this event 2 days ago, which has been being planned for a bit longer than ours has here. So we're still constructing it.
Yeah.
So 11 probably till about 1, I'd say.
Yeah,
is good. The plan, depending on how many people we have and how many speakers and those things.
Great. And so how will people contact you if they would like to participate and speak at your rally?
They can contact me either through Facebook. My name is Shannon Hecker. That's Shannon Hecker. Or email me at Shannon, Shannon, 61184 at gmail.com. So like I said, this event, it's not part of Idle No More. It's really a